You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, November 3rd, 2021. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Terry McAuliffe goes down, and establishment Democrats are already attempting to pin it on Pramila Jayapal. Meanwhile, the New Jersey governor's race up in the air. Steve, the rest across the country, mixed bag. Meanwhile, 5 to 11-year-olds are now eligible for COVID vaccination shots. People are already scheduling them. UAW members, thousands of them working for John Deere, reject the latest negotiated agreement and will continue to strike. Build Back Better, a drug pricing deal, looks to be in place. Places caps on insulin copay at $35. But it appears we're going to get the salt caps also lifted. Meanwhile, Manchin is balking at paid leave again. In good news, Senators Jeff Merkley and Ed Markey are a no on Rahm Emanuel's great Japanese ambassadorship adventure. And I don't know how to tell you this, but apparently there is widespread coronavirus infection found in deer in Iowa. Lastly, later in the program, we'll be hearing from Adrian Martinez. He is from a Costa Rican climate group, La Ruta Decima, de Clima.
La Ruta de Clima.
La Ruta de Clima.
No, you were almost there.
That was close. He'll be on to talk to us about in addition to the other problems at COP26, the dynamic between wealthy countries and less developed and wealthy countries. All that and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Not a particularly pretty night last night in Virginia. We will talk about Virginia. We will talk about New Jersey. We will talk about, Minneapolis and Boston, Detroit. We'll also talk about Philadelphia. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about today. I want to go over the I think it was on Monday or Tuesday, the Supreme Court accepted a case that is going to implicate the non-delegation principle, I guess, and we will talk about that. First, Klima. Thank you, Judy Rugliani. Believe me, I can't tell you how long it took me to just get to Adrian. So it was a big climb, steep climb from there. Of course, Emma Vigeland is here today, New Jersey native herself.
Yes.
So she will weigh in on the New Jersey nail biter, as it were. First, let me just remind you folks that today is November 3rd. On January 16th. It's a Sunday. I believe, is that the MLK weekend too?
Sounds about right.
Could someone check that? I believe it's a 3-day weekend for a lot of people. So what better weekend to take a trip to a town like Boston, which January,
it's happening.
Having grown up in Massachusetts, I can tell you the best time to visit Boston, middle of January.
Middle of January.
Yeah, because not as many tourists.
That, see, I buy this entirely.
No, this is unironically Matt's view of, of traveling to cities.
Look, not as many tourists. Yeah. You're not gonna, you don't want to go down to Quincy Market and be all crowded. You know, when you go down in middle of January, you have a nice cup of seafood chowder, clam chowder. You're not going to have to wait in line for too long for it because tourists don't really, they don't have the inside scoop that the best time to go to Boston, middle of January. So January 16th, Sunday, 3 p.m., live Majority Report show. You can buy your tickets at majoritylive.com.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're using your favorite underused tool.
Exactly.
Whatever, the fake link or the short...
It's not a fake link. I bought,
what do you call it, though?
No, I bought a URL... And then I forwarded it to where you get tickets because I'm not going to do //, this and that. It was $11.
Sam thinks about URL forwards like some people think about cryptocurrency.
Exactly. Exactly. So head over to majoritylive.com, buy your tickets right now. Now, let's say, I remember what Sam said. Majority, what was it? Was it Majority Live or Majority Report Live? Guess what? I got both the URLs.
Whoa.
So go to Majority Report Live too.
Doubling up
if you want.
Covering all
Doesn't
your bases.
Majority Live or Majority Report Live.com to get your tickets for the Majority Report Live show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Makes sense.
Right.
That is the best $22 I think I've ever spent in my entire life.
I mean, I thought it would be a lot more expensive than that. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And now, that website, I could turn around, I could flip that website, make like $200 off it.
Yeah, for everybody that's going to try to buy it.
I don't know. I'm sorry, folks. Like, I got to say, if New Jersey wasn't bad enough, the reading about the deer getting COVID is also driving me up the wall.
Yeah, we spent a good amount of time before the show trying to figure out how that happened. Was someone softly kissing a deer?
Well, if people stick around, we'll get to the answer of that later in the program.
It may be the case, but it may not be the case. You got to keep watching.
Probably not the case. At last count, Terry McAuliffe was down about 60,000 votes in Virginia, and I think that's probably all she wrote. I mean,
it's done. I think it's been called.
It's done. Yeah. I mean, Atrios, the writer at the blog Eschaton, had written on the beginning of the day, if Terry McAuliffe loses, it's going to be Pramila Jayapal's fault. And if he wins, it's, of course, going to be the consultants are brilliant.
Yeah.
We're going to get more sort of sense of exactly what went on in Virginia. But, you know, people saw this coming. And there was a belief that McAuliffe would not lose. First off, you need to know that nothing could be more normal than Democrats or Republicans losing the governorship in Virginia in the first year of a new presidency. Apparently, that's happened for the last 9 presidents. The governorship in Virginia has flipped in that first year.
Enthusiasm gap. Also, you're looking at some of the exit polls, like something like near over 80% of Trump voters showed up for Youngkin, and it was in the 60s for McAuliffe. It's just, this is what happens. It's similar to the midterm backlash.
Yeah. Now, nothing that we're going to be saying here is the total story.
Yeah.
So I'm just, I want people to have a certain context on all of this. The White House's party has lost all but one Virginia governor race since the 1970s. That's a 1 out of 12 record in terms of winning. The other thing you should know is that McAuliffe really, really performed poorly with white, non-college women. So basically white working class women, presumably, for the most part. In Virginia 2020, Joe Biden had won 50% of white women and Trump won 49%. In Virginia 2021, Youngkin won 57% of the white women, McAuliffe 43%. That is a 15-point swing to the Republicans in that specific group. But if you narrow that group even further, and this is from NBC exit polls, Virginia 2020, white women college graduates, Biden won 58%, Trump won 41%. McAuliffe did better than Biden with white college women grads. He did 62%. Youngkin did 38%, but here's the problem. White women non-college, Virginia 2020, Trump won 56%, Biden 44%. In 2021, Youngkin won 75% of those women. It's almost a 20% gain, and McAuliffe lost with 25%, so a 20% loss, more or less. I mean, really 19, whatever. The point being that... that points to two things. And, it, you know, it actually sort of points to one. Like, you know, the education was supposedly at the top of the list. And then the economy. And I suspect the economy is as much about, well, there's two things that I glean from this. And Emma, you tell me your opinion. One is that the economy is hurting non-college educated people more than it is college educated people, because broadly speaking, you have a college degree, the likelihood of your ability to work from home has gone up, is higher than it is if you obviously you don't have a college degree and you may be working jobs that require you to be working in person. So the economic pain there is not equally distributed, which I think everybody sort of knows this, but it's important to see this showing up in the context of, or notice it is showing up in the context of this election. The other issue is that McAuliffe may be just sort of a bad candidate for those people. Oh, the other one, I'm sorry, is education, which is high up there. And of course, if you can afford, and there's not a one-to-one ratio, college educated or not, but if you can afford to, over the past year, to have had a babysitter deal with your kid, help the kid with schooling, maybe you have more computer resources, maybe you have a bigger house, so, you know, the kids can have a specific area in which they're working in, that could also be a factor. Mm-hmm. It could also be a factor that people are upset about the fact that high school age kids, middle school kids, elementary school kids are being taught a discipline of academia that is usually just taught in law schools. That would be critical race theory.
Right.
Now, it's not being taught there, but, you know, we've seen clips of people saying, like, I don't want the, you know, the CRT in the,
I think
it's
that's
about education.
The story. I think that's the story. I mean, I think that the Republicans, from what we're seeing now, and more information is going to come out, Republicans were able to galvanize, and apparently they're in looking at exit polling too, the turnout in red rural areas was significantly high as well. They were able to galvanize moms and families who trend Republican and got them to turn out disproportionately over a non-Trump on the ballot issue, critical race theory was a surrogate. And that should scare people, I think, going forward, because Trump's going to stay in the background until he likely decides to run again in 2024. And the Republicans have found a way to put racism on the ballot even when Trump isn't the one who's the figurehead.
Right. And we should say, like, I don't think it is, I don't think that there it's any one of those things, or any one of them would have necessarily, or any one of those elements could have made a difference. I mean, we don't know. All these things are in play. And so you have to, you know, I don't think there's any one element of that, of any of the things I just mentioned that are determinative in and of themselves. But when you mix them all together, you start to see this. And there was a big turnout. And the idea was that the Republicans were able to rally their base. And like you say, they were able to do it. Youngkin specifically distanced himself from Trump in the general election. Mm-hmm. In the primary, he associated himself with Trump, but in the general election, he distanced himself.
And then
McAuliffe tried to tie him to it,
but he went full court press on CRT.
And the economy and schools. There was also like masks and stuff like that. It's very hard to say that there was one factor, but if you tally up all of these factors, it's very hard to come to any conclusion other than A, McAuliffe was not the right person to address these concerns, either, you know, in terms of the economic struggle that non-college educated white women are going through. He was not the person, apparently, to address the blatant racism. He was not the person to drive out Democratic voters and excite them in any way. I mean, at the end of the day,
his approval rating among Black and Latino voters in Virginia has gone down precipitously.
And I mean, let's be clear here. Can you fight against CRT in and of itself? I mean, it doesn't exist in the context. It's a made up thing. The most obvious way that you deal with an election like this is you have to fire up your people. Mm-hmm. You don't do what the Republicans are doing insofar as, like, because you're not going to fire up your people by saying, like, they're teaching critical race theories in the classrooms. You need to find issues that makes your team, your constituency, whatever you want to call it, your base, not even your base, expand your base. You need to find issues that is going to animate them. And Donald Trump is not a bad, has proven in the past that you can animate them with Donald Trump.
They're doing that in New Jersey. I mean,
I'm talking about the Democrats.
No, I know. No, I'm not trying to turn to New Jersey quickly, but like that's how Murphy was running in Jersey.
McAuliffe was too, but the problem is if Trump's not there, it may not be as effective. Like, you know, Trump studiously stayed away from these races.
No, but so Chitterelli in New Jersey was saying kids can't get COVID. They played this ad over and over again, all over Jersey, him saying kids can't get COVID and then Trump saying it, repeating, linking the two of them together. That's a way to actually have Trump on the ballot. And look, it's really close in Jersey, but the political realities are different than Virginia, but they are both suburban areas that have some pockets of redness in them. And it looks like Murphy was more effective.
Well, I think
Murphy was also a better governor.
Well, and also these other, you know, issues may not have the same salience for the Republicans in New Jersey, but I guess my point is it's probably going to be easier to tie these candidates to Donald Trump the closer we get to the 2024 presidential election. But you're obviously going to need something more to drive people out, because Donald Trump may just decide and may look at this and realize, I just got to lay low a little bit, not engage in these races to the extent that he's capable of doing that. And if Donald Trump isn't out there and you don't have a perfect moment like that where you can sort of juxtapose those two things, someone like Youngkin was very smart, stayed away from Donald Trump for the general election. You can be sure that other Republicans are going to see that and they're going to function in the exact same way. That is something to keep an eye on. But that is what we saw in those results Let me take a quick break here. We'll do a couple of sponsors. And when we do, when we come back, and then we'll go over some more general things here. Oh, we still got, we'll play this when we come back from the break. I mentioned this yesterday. I did not purposely shave the other night because we had a Harry's ad. But still more or less shaven. I'm a day out.
Yeah, that's counts.
For me, that's still a pretty clean shaven
look. It
wouldn't
count in 1950s America, but it counts today.
That's right. But in 1950s America, you, there was no Harry's.
There's no Harry's. Yeah.
If you don't know Harry's, it is time that you do. I don't know how you could have been listening to this program on a consistent basis and not know Harry's. But Harry's was created to be a different type of shaving company from other companies. Harry's crafts their high-quality, long-lasting blades and durable weighted handles that make a close, comfortable shave, and they make it quick and enjoyable. Since Harry's insists that you shouldn't have to choose between a great shave and a fair price, they just give you both. Refill blades start as low as $2. $2. And new Harry customers can get their starter set, which includes a 5-blade razor, a weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, a travel cover, of course, for the blade. It's a $13 value. You get it for $3. Harry's also offers a whole range of amazing face and body care products for men, all delivered right to your door. Super convenient, folks. You don't have to go down to the mall or wherever it is you go to that big pharmacy store, and then half those things are like behind a glass case, and then they're in that huge plastic thing, and they look all buffy. No, you can get a nice, classic-looking handle, a trim blade head, five sharp blades, and check it out. You will not be disappointed. There's never been a better time to try Harry's. Go to harrys.com/majority. You get their starter set for just $3. It's 100% satisfaction guaranteed, so you got nothing to lose. Go to harrys.com/majority right now to get this special offer. That's Harry's, H-A-R-R-Y-S. .com/majority. Also, one of our sponsors today, Magic Spoon. Not coincidentally, or maybe, no, coincidentally, I just had a bunch of their pumpkin chai. I don't know if that flavor is available, but that was a short-term fall flavor. As you know, being a kid, one of the best parts, cereal. Then you grow up, you realize, my God, I can't believe my parents fed me that garbage. Sugar, garbage, garbage and sugar. But now you're older, healthy breakfast doesn't have to be boring. Magic Spoon has all the amazing flavors you'll love, but without all the bad stuff. You looking for protein? Well, you can get your protein from your cereal now. Magic Spoon has 0 grams of sugar, has 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving, plus only 140 calories a serving. Even better, it's keto-friendly, it's gluten-free, it's grain-free, it's soy-free, and it's low-carb. You can try the variety pack with flavors like cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. You can get cinnamon, which happens to be my favorite. Every now and then, they have special flavors. I had the apple cinnamon. I had the pumpkin chai this morning, as you could see. Like, Emma knows. I don't even put it in milk or anything. I just get like a plate.
You do snack on it quite a bit.
A plate of cereal.
I didn't know that's what you were having this morning. But.
Yes. Go to magicspoon.com/majority report. You can get your custom bundle of cereal and try it today. Be sure to use our promo code MAJORITYREPORT at checkout. Save $5 off your order. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/majorityreport. Use the code MAJORITYREPORT to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode and my breakfast. It makes it easier when you can say that.
Yeah, I did that. I didn't. That's just that's not part of the copy. That's just, you know.
Well, I did. I literally had.
I know, but you say it every time because that's because you're always eating magic.
Oh, I am. Folks, lastly, one more sponsor today. As you may or may not know, incognito mode, when you're surfing around the web, not quite as incognito as you think. Because like the Chrome browser itself, it's a Google product. And Google has made its fortune by tracking your movements online. You know what they say? When it's free, it's because you're the product. So how do you actually make yourself invisible as possible online? Well, I'll tell you what I do. I use ExpressVPN. Even in incognito mode, your online activity gets tracked. Data brokers still get to buy and sell your data. Data harvesters use your IP to uniquely identify you and your location. But with ExpressVPN, your connection gets rerouted through an encrypted server and your IP address is masked. So when you're using those apps on your phone, hit your VPN. They're not trailing you around. It makes it harder for third parties to identify you. ExpressVPN is super easy to use no matter what device you're on. Your phone, your laptop. On your phone, all you got to do, you hit one button. You're done. Laptop, same deal. Smart TV. All you have to do is tap one button for instant protection. It's super easy to do, folks. One more line of defense against all the insanity that exists in terms of tracking and privacy. So if you really want to go incognito and protect your privacy, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN. Visit expressvpn.com/majority. Get 3 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/majority. Go to expressvpn.com/majority to learn more. And as always, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the, you support the free show, but you get free commercials and you get extra content every day. Check that out. And again, Majority Live to get tickets to our live show. Okay. Let's start up with this. This was inevitable. Here's Anderson Cooper and Van Jones. Emma was talking about watching Jake Tapper say some nonsense like this, too.
Yeah.
I mean, just keep this in mind. Terry McAuliffe wins. Is the response, like, what is the response?
Go
like,
squad.
Wow, we really should be
leaning more into progressive.
We should be doing
politics.
That $7 trillion build back better bill. No.
No, it's always heads, I win, tails, you lose. That's
exactly.
That's the when it comes to progressives.
Exactly. And let's also be clear. Most people don't know what's in the build back better bill. It has not been promoted, and partly because I think people didn't want to probably like sort of promise something that wasn't going to be delivered. The only thing that people know about that bill is that there's been haggling about it for 6 months.
Oh, nothing can get done. Oh, dang.
Exactly. And this is a function of two people.
And they're blaming Biden, by the way. I mean, Biden's approval rating is taking a hit for it. And yet, like, the rest of the cable... atmosphere or ecosystem wants to blame progressives.
When this bill was a $6 trillion sparkle in gleam in Bernie Sanders' eyes, Joe Biden's approval rating was high. Mm. Play this clip with Anderson Cooper and Van Jones and Scott Jennings, who is a Mitch McConnell advisor, former.
How much of this is a message just to the Democratic Party that it's too far left? That if you're the squad or if you're, you know, someone who's been calling for defund police or socialism or democratic socialism.
I wonder if Thierry had been able to stick on a message of economic progress, family leave and minimum wage and that kind of stuff,
And maybe we wouldn't be making this argument. In other words, there was an economic message from the Democrats that was available and was necessary given the rising costs. But what happened is we pulled out of our own federal bill all the family leave stuff. You're undermining the economic message for Terry McAuliffe and leave him with Trump is bad and vaccine mandates are good. I don't know that this is an up or down vote on progressive politics.
And he leaned in to the school issue. I was stunned when he handed Youngkin the issue of the campaign. I don't think parents should be involved in the schools. And then literally on the eve of the election, he's running around Virginia with Randy Weingarten, the head of the union that kept the schools closed. It's not just the curriculum issue. The schools were closed. Parents were pissed. They knew they should have been open. And McAuliffe not only handed it to Youngkin on a tee, he then at the end of the campaign flipped everyone off and said, I'm going to even run on it even harder. And it has killed him in these suburbs.
Now, I got to say, I agree. I mean, it's not too often I agree with Van Jones, and it's rarely often I agree with a Mitch McConnell advisor. But I think for the most part, that is correct. I don't know that the kids should have been in school that entire time. I disagree with that. But there's no doubt about it. People are pissed in general, and they don't want to be reminded about it, and they don't want to be told that they're wrong not to be pissed. I have the option to send my kid early last year, and I didn't do it, but I'm still pissed about the fact that he was home. I mean, and I don't want anybody coming around to say like I think like the McAuliffe blew that one without a doubt.
You have to understand why people are frustrated.
Exactly.
And even if you feel that the frustration is misguided at you, which it would be if people are saying get the kids back to schools, no restrictions, you don't give them a bit of daylight to direct that frustration at you, right?
I mean, the way you address that is, this has been the suckiest year ever.
Yes, we all are going through it. It's awful.
And if mistakes were made, they were made, and we're just going to try and move forward. I mean, that's what you do. I mean, Terry McAuliffe wasn't governor. Terry McAuliffe didn't make any decision about the schools. And so you have the room to the latitude to say, like, it may not have been the best decision at that time. We'll never know. But if your kid's safe, that's what you should be happy for. We're going forward. I mean, this stuff is rudimentary politics. And the fact that McAuliffe did not have the ability to run on those things that are in Build Back and Better, that is a failure of the Democratic leadership in Washington, D.C. The idea that you could say this is a function of the squad, I mean, even to raise that, like Anderson Cooper does, is the most ludicrous thing. Like, I mean, Terry McAuliffe is the furthest thing away. There's no way that someone looks at Terry McAuliffe and goes, I don't want to vote for AOC. Like, that doesn't, that's not there. And if that is, then you are done anyways. Because if it's not AOC, it's San Francisco Nancy Pelosi. And if it's not San Francisco Nancy Pelosi, then it's, you know, whatever you want to say. It's, you know,
and then
crazy Kristen Sinema.
Can you make the argument, too, that Youngkin is able to distance himself from Trump, and then on the flip side, that McAuliffe is unable to distance himself from the crazy AOC Bernie way?
Right.
They never make that case.
No.
Because every race is different. But, you know, it's, again, heads, progressives are to be blamed. Tails, progressives are to be blamed.
I challenge anybody, you're in Virginia or outside of Virginia, to tell me what Terry McAuliffe's pitch was as to why you should affirmatively come out and vote for him. Mm-hmm. I mean,
you had to hear it like secondhand from like people saying pardoned a whole bunch of folks and stuff like that. Like, okay, that's good. Like,
No. But in the future, like, what was Terry McAuliffe going to do?
What
in
was
the future?
He running on?
I definitely think there is a value to being like, I'm not going to be that guy.
Yes, but that was...
But you need to have more.
And isn't it ironic that he was pretty much the Clinton handpicked candidate, McAuliffe, and then he ran on, I'm not that guy? Damn.
I also think that there's another lesson here, is that, like, that ilk of Democratic candidate, their day is over.
It's over.
And McAuliffe was not a bad governor in Virginia, or at least he wasn't as bad as I thought he would. And let's be clear, in Virginia, you had 2 years of a Democratic trifecta, essentially, of a full rule. They did good things. Expanded the franchise. They got rid of... they did all sorts of criminal justice reform. Got rid of the death penalty. There was a whole list of things that I think the Democrats did pretty well. They expanded Medicaid under the Democrats in Virginia. They expanded voting rights, ended juvenile life without parole, legalized pot. I mean, that's what you do when you have the power. You run the board because you're not guaranteed to have it forever.
Say that for the federal government
Exactly.
Well, and yeah, do it in a way that might help you later down the line, right? Like the problem I always have is Democrats manage democracy and mm-hmm. instead of cultivating it.
Oh, that's yeah, exactly. I mean, the inability to carve out an exception for voting rights right now with the filibuster is exactly that. It's exactly like that. Let's set ourselves up for failure.
Zach Carter had a good piece in the Atlantic. He must have done last night at like 2 a.m. Maybe he'd written it beforehand, then he posted. I don't know. But education was the top issue in the contest. He wrote, according to the Washington Post Shar poll, narrowly edging out the economy, 24 to 23. Democrats typically do very well in education in Virginia. Suburban voters organized their lives around well-funded public schools. But this year, Youngkin entered Election Day 9 points up over McAuliffe among voters who said education was their top priority. Now,
it's also just getting the kids back to school, too, and unmasking them or whatever. These parents feel like they have a boot on their neck or like they're under all of this pressure and someone is promising them relief. The boot may be back on their neck. They may be kneecapped or they may be hurt in another way, but like they're provided with the prospect of relief by like this candidate who's saying, I'm going to make things normal again.
Yep.
And that's tantalizing.
Now, the one thing I think that I'm just read a little more from what Carter says. The most important data point for the election is public school enrollment in Northern Virginia, and it's very bad for Democrats. Fairfax County, the largest county in the state, lost more than 10,000 students since the start of the pandemic, a decline of about 5%. Neighboring Arlington County, drop-off is 3.9%. In Loudoun County, it's 3.4%. Those may look like modest declines, but they should not be happening in prosperous counties where the population is growing quickly. The public schools in all three counties have a reputation for quality. People move there for the schools. And so there's this broad dissatisfaction. Now, the interesting thing is that white women with college degrees voted for McAuliffe at a higher rate than they did for Joe Biden. But overall, there was a like Emma said, there was a frustration that is completely understandable. And then on top of that frustration, it gets racialized.
Yes.
And it gets manifested. What are you going to do about last year that your kid wasn't in school and it was incredibly annoying? Nothing, because I can't go back in time. But going forward, I'm going to make sure that school looks like I want it to look like. Mm-hmm. And if someone's telling me they're coming in and teaching CRT, then I'm going to go after that. And there's nothing that a McAuliffe can do about that specific dynamic. But what a McAuliffe can do is go in and understand the frustration and talk about how things are going to get better. And they didn't address that. And they didn't have a proactive argument. And I don't know what that means for the midterms, because it's conceivable. I can imagine a scenario where starting this week, kids are getting 5 to 11-year-olds are getting vaccinated. Maybe 6 months from now, the 12 to 18-year-olds get their booster shot. Maybe the 5 to 11-year-olds don't even need one. It's not inconceivable to me that at this time next year, COVID is just like way in the rearview mirror. Or it's also conceivable to me that those freaking deer in Iowa that have COVID are just basically a reservoir and they're mutating the damn thing. And, you know, some dude goes out and decides to, after his first kill of a deer, and they, you know, scoops up some of the blood so that he and his kid can drink it. And then boom, we're off to the races again.
Right.
I mean, so much. Yeah. Well, but so much of this, so much of what we're living in this era is a function of COVID. And so
like all the rising crime statistics you hear always in the context of look at this city maybe said something about defund the police and not like, oh, they're undergoing a pandemic that all cities are going through.
Right. And then this notion that people voted against the defund the police.
We should we should talk about Minneapolis because like that always was likely to fail, but now it's being framed as backlash against progressives. I mean, Matt said the other day, what was the median or the average age of 63?
The average voter is 80% white and age 63. And,
in Minneapolis.
And the police defund stuff, that's the way it was interpreted and ultimately put on the ballot in a way that wasn't exactly energizing the people who wanted to defund the police themselves because it put a lot of the responsibility in the hands of the city council and mayor. And, you know, it really depended on them actually running with the ball. And really, they showed no indication of actually wanting to do that.
Yeah. But it's a narrative that you can easily envelop into the let's blame the left.
Meanwhile, Austin rejected Prop A, which is forcing more cops based on population growth. And they're like, no, we're not going to do that anymore.
Larry Krasner, perhaps the most prominent reformist DA in the country, won his reelection fairly handily.
Yeah.
There's talk about like India Walton in Buffalo. The idea that she lost as, first of all, she did not run on defund the police. Second off, we know there was a tremendous amount of money that was poured in against her in this race.
Look up the FBI raid in 2019 of the urban development agency in Buffalo that was funneling money to Byron Brown's campaign, and then also look up all of the Republican money that went behind this write-in campaign, and then tell me that this is about the rejection of the left. Ridiculous.
It's absurd. Daniel Nikanian, we've had on this program, you can check out his What's on the Ballot, probably the best coverage of local politics in one place. Anywhere. He had a What's on the Ballot with like, just, you know, it just collected like the 220 most important races of the course of an off year election. Nuts. But he had a rundown on Twitter. Republicans win in Virginia, probably the assembly too. It looks like that as well. Republicans sweep Pennsylvania judges races. However, Democrats still hold a majority on the Supreme Court, significant majority. They just got their own. They had open the seats that they'd already occupied. Democrats will probably keep New Jersey's trifecta, but we'll wait and see on that.
Yeah.
Democrats win in Manchester, New Hampshire, not a blue town. St. Petersburg mayorship. That is, I think, that like a DSA, maybe even. Or not mayor, I'm sorry, in a town council race. Albuquerque, and they flip a Maine special. Republicans win in Aurora and county races in Pennsylvania, and they flipped a Texas special. So on the progressive wins in Boston, you had your first woman as mayor of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
First
Michelle Wu.
Asian American woman in, I should say.
She comes from like the Elizabeth Warren, ecosystem in Massachusetts. So.
She's not even from Massachusetts. She grew up in Illinois.
Huh.
Unbelievable.
Outsider.
A total outsider. Cleveland, Philly, Pittsburgh, Dearborn, you had a very progressive, I believe the first, Arab American mayor in the U.S. I believe so. First Arab American in the U.S., also a progressive Democrat. In Dearborn, he had the first black mayor ever elected in Pittsburgh, which is pretty nuts. In Dearborn, Michigan as well. Progressive losses in Buffalo and Minneapolis and Seattle, however. Of course, Eric Adams won in New York, beating Curtis Sowa. That was a real nail-biter.
Curtis Sowa bringing his cat to the polls, didn't I guess?
I was worried. I saw some chalk on the ground said, vote for Sowa, and I'm like, damn, the movement started.
Yeah.
conservatives lost some high-profile school board races on the CRT. I mean, it really sort of depends, frankly, and I wonder what it is about Virginia, why CRT works better there than it says, let's say, in New Hampshire.
Mm. The thing of historical memory.
Tucson voted in a $15 minimum wage, and rent control won in St. Paul, Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Yes, that's big.
We had increased police funding, like you say, lost in Austin. The charter change that would have allowed for the first step in replacing the Minneapolis Police Department loses in Minneapolis. Cleveland Oversight Board won. In New York, we got into the Constitution that folks have a right to clean water and clean air, which is, I think, going to be huge. I don't think people fully grasp the implications of that.
Huge.
If it is a right that you have it, it's going to open up the opportunity of forcing local governments, county governments, state government to provide that for people. And it's going to give a lot more actionable things in terms of polluters and whatnot.
However, it was surprising that that was the only runaway victory in these ballot initiatives.
Yep.
We don't know the results for a lot of them. But
three of them were for voting changes that would have made it easier to vote.
Same day registration, mail-in voting, and the third one.
No excuse absentee.
No excuse absentee.
And the other initiative would have frozen the number of state Senate seats. This is ballot initiative number one. And would have frozen them. Republicans in the past have gotten in and sort of added a seat. And it basically would have said, I mean, it would be a problem if there was a massive increase in the population of New York State, which does not seem to be the trend at the moment.
Yeah.
So right now, each Senate seat in New York State has about 300,000 constituents. 63 times 300,000. Now you get more or less get the population in New York. This would have just basically locked that in. And it would have prevented the Republicans if they ever did get control of the government, from adding a couple of seats so that they could increase their numbers. All of these voting reforms failed or appear to have failed. We'll see. And part of that, in some respect, I feel like we didn't do a good job in promoting it at all. I don't think we could have made a difference, but we were part of the broader problem, which was these things were not articulated. They were not fought for. There was nobody came out strongly for them.
Ari Berman says, just looking across Hudson Valley, he saw a lot of signs to vote no, but not much opposition in signs that were promoting voting yes.
And I will say this about signs. When it comes to
signs,
when it comes to referendums where people generally have no idea what they're doing, I think signs have a lot more impact.
No, political signs I'm all for, especially with ballot initiatives and progressive candidates. But
participatory budging in Boston and Detroit voted to decriminalize mushrooms.
Ah,
that's sick.
Yeah.
Party on. There you go.
That doesn't mean you'd be able to buy them there, though. I assume you could probably just grow them, and I'd be curious how.
I don't know that it's not necessarily regulated and for sale there. So those are the big races, and I just want to go over this one Supreme Court case, and then we'll go into the fun half. We should also say John Deere workers rejected their agreement. We'll talk more about that in the days to come. On last Friday, the Supreme Court agreed to hear a challenge to the EPA's authority to regulate power plant emissions. Now, okay. I would just explain something about the Supreme Court. I saw some, I don't want to get into a back and forth about it, but I saw somebody who had done a commentary on a clip that we did about somebody had called in. I can't remember who the guy was, some libertarian or something like this, and called in about Citizens United. Mm-hmm. And the commentator who was looking at it said, like, Sam and Emma doesn't know what Citizens United about. It's about advertising. Advertising for a political documentary. The facts of the case in Citizens United were, yes, that there was a group that wanted to advertise a documentary they had made. I think it was like anti-Carrie or anti-Clinton. I can't remember.
Hillary Clinton.
Anti-Clinton. And they wanted to advertise. Those were the facts of the case. That is not why Citizens United is an important case, and that is not what the case is about.
Yes. I wrote my senior thesis on this very topic, so libertarian caller, you do not know as much about it as us.
Well, it was actually a sort of a left-leaning commentator who was making this point.
Oh, sorry.
Who did not seem to understand that the reason why Citizens United is important is not because it's about advertising. If the case was solely about, should you be able to advertise a political documentary, then Citizens United would never be talked about. What Citizens United, what the Supreme Court found...
A left-leaning commentator makes this... Okay.
What Citizens United, the essence of that case, the importance of that case is that the Supreme Court found that not only was it okay for you to advertise a political documentary, but that the federal government had no right, and it was an abridgment of a constitutional right of speech, for the federal government to restrict in any way corporate spending on electioneering. That's the whole point of Citizens United, not the advertisement. The point is that the Supreme Court used that as an opportunity to say the federal government does not have the right, not only to say within 60 days of an election, you cannot pay for something that is electioneering, et cetera, by a corporation, but rather that the federal government had no authority in any way to abridge the expenditure of electioneering money by corporations. That is the essence of Citizens United. Just like in this case, it's not just simply whether the EPA has the authority to regulate power plant emissions. It is whether, ultimately, Congress has the ability to pass a general law that can delegate the authority of making the specific assessments to executive agencies. So, in other words, Congress writes a law that says,
regulate this coal plant.
No. Congress writes a law that says, Americans deserve clean air.
Okay.
We delegate the authority to the EPA to assess what constitutes clean, healthy air.
Yeah.
And what's the best way to achieve that? Because Congress does not have the ability, because they're not scientists, and they're not in the business of constantly updating, to assess what is in the air and what that might do to human beings long term.
So they delegate the authority to the EPA for them to determine what's the best way to do
what's
this.
The best way and what's the most dangerous elements in the air.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was a time where we were not aware that lead gasoline puts lead in the air, and that could be a problem. And if Congress was necessarily had to, you know, guess like what's in fracking fluid, we don't know.
Let alone all of the corruption issues that are involved in the way that Congress might be writing legislation if the EPA does not have the authority to make these determinations.
I mean, frankly, the EPA has its own corruption issues with this as well.
Well, they're already, just, I mean, the Republicans are already trying to, like, stack political actors in the EPA and yes, get rid of experts as well.
There's been real problems at
this
the EPA.
This would open the floodgate.
But the corruption is, I think, less the problem as much as, like, there's only one way for this government to function. If the government has decided that they want to make sure that food is safe for human beings, that air is breathable for human beings, that broadly speaking, we don't want predatory practices by financial institutions. We could go on and on and on, because every single the way our government works, there was an analysis that was done. I don't know if I, oh yeah, here it is. Okay. So this is an analysis that was done by the Washington Post. And this is a case, remember now, the Supreme Court took this case, the non-delegation doctrine was held by the Supreme Court back in the beginning of the 20th century. And it goes along with the Chevron doctrine, which says that when, unless Congress is specific, courts must defer to these agencies' expertise. So there are two different things that are working here, which allow Congress to broadly say to the executive agencies, we want you to broadly do this. And you guys are the experts. You figure out how to best achieve these goals. When we give you the broad goals, we want safe drinking water. We want clean rivers. We want clean air, healthy air. We want healthy food, et cetera, et cetera. And according to this Washington Post analysis by Pamela Clauser McCann and Charles R. Shippen, they found that the founders themselves often delegated authority to executive agencies, indicating they believed delegation was consistent with the Constitution. There was a period in this country, 20s, 10s, 30s of the 1900s, that the Supreme Court espoused this non-delegation doctrine. Remember, that court was incredibly regressive. It also allowed for all sorts of voting restrictions.
That was also child labor laws. And
yeah,
where,
yes.
That regressive period.
So, and there's and this is going to have broad implications. And so they did a study to find out. They began with a well-known list of major statutes, 443 of them, that were passed between 1947 and 2016, passed by Congress to establish how operative would those statutes be if the Supreme Court decided to readopt a non-delegation doctrine. They wanted to assess based upon they did some thing. I'm not going to go into it, but they basically, you know, cross-referenced some databases. They wanted to identify all agencies that drew statutory authority for the rules and regulations from each law so that they can infer which statutes delegate policy-making authority to these agencies. What percentage of major laws delegate? The answer is more than 99% of them.
Whoa!
Basically all of them. Only four of the 443 laws they examined did not delegate any authority to government agencies. And one of those, the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act, delegates policymaking power to the states. Furthermore, most of the laws delegate to several agencies. Nearly half delegate between two and five agencies. Another third delegate to more than five. Here's the point, is that if this Supreme Court, and this is their first opportunity with their 6-3 majority, if they reestablish, essentially recreate a non-delegation doctrine, virtually all of the functioning of agencies will be hampered. Virtually all of the ability of Congress to pass laws that protect workers, consumers, children, parents, citizens, animals, air, water. I don't know. What else is there?
Yeah.
That allows you to have the internet. I mean, whatever it is will be decimated, undermined. It'll take time for each one of these things to be undermined, because it'll be just a function of the corporations coming in saying, you can't do this.
Yeah.
You don't have the authority. And so then Congress wants to regulate us putting in tetraclopoclazine into the water, or whatever it is, this new, chemical we made up. They have to go back and they have to legislate specifically for that one chemical into maybe specific size water bodies, right? Because Congress said they don't want it in rivers, but they didn't say anything about ponds.
Yeah.
They didn't say anything about the ocean. This is a real problem. And, short of the guests that we've had on this program to talk about it, it's completely obscured. Completely obscured. And it could be really massively, problem. I mean, just crazy. So that and the deer getting COVID. Have a good day, folks.
Yes. I wish I had something to add, but you.
Did it make sense what I said?
It was, yeah. I mean, I don't like complimenting you, but
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it was well said.
No, you're not the only person in that situation, I can assure you.
It's interesting that literal mindedness. You see a lot from libertarians about this was about an advertisement. Like, but that's not how law works. There are larger ramifications.
Yeah.
Right.
This is
right.
ABCs.
Right. Right. I mean, that's the thing, is that there's sort of you really need to read more than just Wikipedia to understand, sort of the implications of these things. You don't have to read a lot more than Wikipedia, but you need to read more than Wikipedia.
Yeah, well, like free speech literalism.
I mean, literalism is designed to be like to uphold norms and to essentially obscure larger truths.
And this is I understand that, ripping the rights of women for self-determination of their body is paramount issue when it comes to the Supreme Court. And
right.
It's certainly something that I think that, regardless of what happens with Texas, we're going to see in Mississippi, this right continued to be sort of abridged in my estimation.
I would guess that they side in like that, in that sweet spot. Well, not so sweet, but the 15-week Mississippi
and
law.
Then it'll be 10, and then it'll be 6. And I mean, it's just a matter of time.
Once you abridge Roe, it's very easy to continue doing so. No rhyme intended.
But in terms of like the way it's going to impact people's lives in every state in the country, this non-delegation doctrine could be more problematic. It's not something that Democrats can run on, it seems to me. But
yeah, and it's going to get a fraction of the attention, and that's the issue there as well. So,
all right, folks. You can support this show by becoming a member, going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Stick around. If you're listening to the fun half, you're going to be able to hear from Adrian Martinez, who's going to be who's from La Ruta de Clima.
You should just mouth it, and then Matt will say it into the mic.
Can dub it.
Adrian Martinez from
La Ruta de Clima.
You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget, you can join the Discord for free, majoritydiscord.com. You can get the app and IM us during the fun half for free, majorityapp.com. You can come and see us, not for free, but in person, live in Boston in January.
You can see our legs, like we'll have legs,
promising we're going to put, I'm not sure if we're going to do a table. I'm not sure what style we're going to do it this time.
What? So usually, we're going to have a curtain and then we'll just be sitting at a table and then close the curtain so no one can ever see our legs?
That's sort of what I do occasionally at these things, but we'll see.
It's good to maintain the illusion, I guess.
January 16th, go to majoritylive.com, buy your tickets. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckian media universe.
Yeah, tonight on Left Reckoning, Alec Karakatsanis joining us to talk about the carceral state that we all live in and how we currently jail, for instance, black people at 6 times the rate of apartheid South Africa and how we got there and how we can hope to fight against that. So tonight, patreon.com/leftreckoning to get the postgame.
That is a sweet Sonics hat. I don't know if I've seen you wear that before.
Oh, yes, my throwback Sonics.
Yeah.
I guess all Sonics hats would be throwback, but...
Folks, quick break, head into the fun half.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
That guy might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
Do.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh. Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.